It is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is December 2nd, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to, celebrate Happy Wednesday with some Italian music. And with some news from the European Union and what is going on with the standoff between Russia and Turkey. As you all know, we've been watching the summit, the international summits on global climate change in Paris for some time. And we see how everything is going to rotate toward an understanding. Because remember, life goes on, and no matter what happens, we're going to expect, the new generation to keep on going, and all the problems that we used to have in the past will go away. They will create their own new problems. So life is rotating, and in the midst of all this confusion of the world, the global war on terror, we found that people are actually getting along. Most of the people getting along. It's because everybody know that there is a big threat over there someplace. And it's important for everybody to stay put together and watch, over your shoulder. And whoever doesn't threat you, it becomes your buddy. Because you never know when you actually need to think, work together against terror. So as we speak, there is a standoff between Russia and Turkey in some sort of way, because the challenge has been, first, why they drop out the plane? How come Turks decided to blow down a Russian airplane? So the news from this side of the globe saying it was interfering, the Russians were interfering with the transport of oil from the ISIS to Turks. And this transportation were taking place, and the Russians just started to bomb whatever comes from out of the ISIS camp, I guess. And the Turks didn't want to. And the same talking, there is talks about a pipeline that was supposed to be installed, for gas pipeline that was a standoff between Turks and the Russian again. I guess that there is a fight over the economical outcome of this war, and there are many players. In the midst of all, of course, America decided to send some troops to change the structure of the standoff, which is smart and which is understood, even though that the Brits are completely, completely opposing to any boots on the ground. And in every single war, we all are opposed to boots on the ground. But after a while, you see that you need to come to terms with what's the reality on the ground, and people do decide to put troops on the ground. Many people are working around this segment of territory. Seems that the Syrian president does not have control of the country anymore. Maybe a third of it, they said, with, of course, escorted very tightly with the Russian friends. But the idea is that you have a territory that is in chaos, and nobody is allowed to start managing it for real. It's dangerous for everyone's sake. But the news that I want to tell you about is the fact that they're talking about, ISIS is taking over a lot of space in Libya. That's what I heard. So I don't want to go into it if I don't have the tangible goods to give you, so forget it. The only thing about today is I want to give you some music, okay? Let's listen to it. It's okay. We just want to come and take back to whatever we can to keep on going.
It is an honor for me to be here co-chairing with my good friend Nasser Judeh, Foreign Minister of Jordan, but co-chair of the Union for the Mediterranean together with the European Union. This ministerial that comes for the first time since 2008, long time, and coincides with the 20th anniversary of the Barcelona process. There is not much to celebrate in these times. It's hard times, both for Europe and for the southern and eastern part of the Mediterranean. Still, we are today here, 43 countries united. We share geography, we share history, we share most of all the same problems, and first and foremost, the issue of terrorism, radicalization, and a refugee crisis and the migratory flows that concerns us all, Europeans and our friends from the southern and the eastern shore of the Mediterranean. And we share the common priority we put on solving the crisis, the many crises that our region is facing, starting from the Syrian one, but also the Libyan and the Israelo-Palestinian one. We have common interests, and that's why it's so important, especially in these difficult times, to come together, united, because our unity is our strength. And it's also our realistic possibility to solve the many different and difficult challenges we have in front of us, jointly. You would be maybe surprised by knowing that not only the Mediterranean is at the center of the most turbulent events in this last month and years, but it's also the least integrated region in the world. I'm always shocked when I remember the numbers. If you think of trade, 90% in our region, 90% of trade happens within Europe, 9% between Europe and the southern shores of the Mediterranean, and only 1% across and within the Arab world, across the southern shore of the Mediterranean. This tells us that priority number one for our common work is to accelerate and make better integration of the region. Regional economic development, by regional projects to tie together the countries of the region, not only north, south and east, but also across our region, is the priority number one, because a better economic and regional cooperation and development is key to improve lives of our citizens on all sides of the region. And we know very well that this is also a key element for preventing and solving conflicts and crises, and to tackle radicalization of our youth. We agreed, I think today, very clearly with the ministers of those 43 countries around the table, that a special focus of our common work has to be on our youth, on offering job opportunities, education opportunities, exchanges for our young people across the Mediterranean. Because it's through economic, social opportunities for our youth and through dialogue among our different societies that we have the real possibility to not only understand each other, but to build bridges for cooperation. It's, again, not only through our institutional unity that we will increase our strength, but it's also increasing the resilience of our societies and the unity of our societies and of our people, that we respond in the best possible way to the threat that terrorism poses to our societies everywhere, in Paris, as in Tunis, in Beirut, as in Egypt, or elsewhere in Europe. We are united in this, as well as we are united on all the political agenda we have. We are united working on a political solution on Syria. We are united trying to push for a meaningful resumption of peace talks between Israel and Palestine. We are united in hosting and protecting refugees and trying to manage the migratory flows. We are united in offering a future of peace for this region that is so beautiful and still so difficult in this moment. So a strong political message of unity from today, but also some very concrete projects on which the Union for the Mediterranean has have been working over these years. The Secretary General will be more detailed on this, but it's not only political messages that bring us here today, it's also many different concrete projects for development at very local level in all our countries for, again, employment, education, women, human rights, and bringing opportunities for all our countries in the region, because only together we will face these difficult times and give to our region the beauty of politics that the beauty of its nature calls for. I thank you very much. I skipped in the beginning the thanks, which is a must, not only formality, to not only the co-chair of the Union for the Mediterranean, Mr. Jude, but also our host, Minister Margallo, here today, and the Secretary General of the Union for the Mediterranean. I will pass immediately the floor to Minister Jude.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One. We had Angela Mogherini. She was talking to the representative of Jordan. I think that her voice is loud and clear about the unity of the world against terror today, and her intention to come forward and bring everybody together. She's doing an excellent job, and I wish her all the best, and I hope that she keep up doing the good job she does. Anyway, in Israel today, there are a lot of concern, and of course, there are a lot of excitement over the next round of what's going to happen. But as we speak, we have to consider that the shuffling on the grounds are intense. So I'm not going to mix my two pennies into it, because there are so many items that are playing. But I just want you to, you know, to be inspired to come to, this is December, this is the end of this year. We really want to start thinking what's our plan for the next year is going to be, and how we're going to take it from now on, and how the world is going to start making the economy work. Because if there is anything that you guys pay attention to less while you're talking about terrorism and all our political friends, they are in our midst constantly talking about terrorism, and everybody is frightened to travel, to do business, to go along and do things. And I want you guys to remember, those politicians are paid by the people. They are using all the funds that they are available. They manage the world. They manage everybody's countries, and they are respected for that. Not a problem. But they are in our life constantly. I want them off the news a little. And let's start talking about what the future is going to look like. Hollywood, let's do something. You know, you guys are sitting and seeing the development of the real world as much as, you know, life follows art. Definitely, you know, with all the arts that we had in the past, and I made that comment already, and I'm repeating it again, I don't care. You guys gave us so much negative movies that this is the face that we are facing now. Now, I would like you guys, whatever you are, just make some good movies. It's about time that we see some inspiration, some futuristic. I don't care if you do sci-fi, But please, don't put guns in the hands of children in the movies and then tell us, oh, you know, that's terrorism. No, it's repetition of what you teach them. Don't teach them bad. Start, you know, telling them what is right. I remember when I was a little girl, I wanted to see the Sound of Music. That was my inspiration. I saw the girls dancing. I saw the girls singing. My life wasn't about terror. I didn't, and we were after Holocaust, God, you know? Well, a few years after, of course, I wasn't born there. But you got the gist of it, right? Let's get some music, if I may, and we can be after that.
Chiudo gli occhi e penso a lei, il profumo dolce della pelle sua, è una voce dentro che mi sta portando dove nasce il sole. Sole sono le parole, ma se vanno scritte tutto può...
Wow, that's grande amore, that's volo, it's that trio that was in the Eurovision. I love them. Since I listened to them for the first time, I never stopped listening to them because they are incredible. That's all, you know, nothing I can say about them more. They are beautiful. Anyway, I want to talk about something. You know that every time that everybody, you know, somebody asks me, where you come from? I said Israel, and they say, oh, I said, and they ask if, you know, there are camels over there. Every time there is this sensation that when we say Israel, it's like desert and camels and people in tribes, like in the movies. Well, let me tell you about Israel. It's not like that. It's actually kicking. They have a lot of breakthrough in research and a lot of students. Israeli are Jewish by nature. They are scholars. We are the people of the book, so they study a lot. We love to study, even though that is our teaching is not free by all means, and the higher education is really hard to get in, which is horrible. Because 50% of the children are not even allowed to graduate from high school, which I complain a lot, and I tell you guys that it's something semantic that it's happening there constantly every year, and they're saying it's not methodical, but I'm saying if it's 50%, it must be methodical, because you cannot allow people to have a 50% dropout of high school, to have labor, to be labor force. You know what? Maybe I'm young or not too young, but maybe I'm innocent in my thought. But I think that education is a door for everybody, and I wonder what I can say to the American people. As far as education goes, how lucky they are to have university all over. How lucky they have space. How lucky they have to have, you know, teachers and scholars teaching them constantly. And they have, you know, they don't even bother to thank God for that. But I want to remind you all that America is a great nation because she teaches her children, even though they don't teach, they don't learn. Yeah, I know. But mostly they do. So when we have a research, Israeli research that they have a breakthrough, and you know that 50% of them don't have a chance even to get the graduation, you say how lucky they are, but they're really lucky to have a chance to find this breakthrough. And I would love to have an American university over here. And we need to to sum this with the fact that America invests in Israel defense. I don't know how much you invest in education. And so many countries around the Middle East, you have the American universities of all sort of things. You don't have the American here in Israel, which is sad. It saddened me because I would love to go to an American university because we think, when I say now we, it's the American side of me, we think differently than the Israeli. I've been to college here in Israel. I took economic classes. Trust me, if it wasn't for the mathematics, we speak a different language, even though I speak the language. They do have a different set of standards. I can't explain it enough. People that go through graduate school in America do have to understand that the Israeli teach have a different set of state of mind. That's how cultural difference is built. And I didn't know that I have so much of it in during the years. How screwed I become with the Israeli one, but I don't care if I'm an American by education. It's fine. I'm honored. I'm Italian by other means, but I am who I am because, and I'm the experience of my life. That's who I am. Anyway, I wanted to tell you about a breakthrough that Israeli research that improve treatment of HIV that could lead to cure. And remember, for some funny reason, the world stopped warning the children about this disease. And many people just forget that it's so hard to take care of. It's not something you can treat. You know, you guys have to warn everybody. We need to start re-talking about it because I know that the epidemic proportion got higher. And I know that there is a famous superstar in Hollywood that told everybody that he had it. And I'm so sad for that. But you guys have to remember that we need to make everything in our power to stop, protect the children from that. And by God will, if we could find a cure, that will be a great, great thing. All right. So let's listen to some more news now.
This evening, we mark the 40th anniversary of one of the darkest days in the history of the Olympic Games. A sickening act of terrorism that betrayed everything the Olympic movement stands for and everything that we in Britain believe in. So as the world comes together in London to celebrate these remarkable Olympic Games and all of the values that the Olympic Games represent, it is right that we should stop and remember the 11 Israeli athletes who so tragically lost their lives when those values came under attack in Munich 40 years ago. It was a truly shocking act of evil, a crime against the Jewish people, a crime against humanity, a crime that the world must never forget. We remember too, just last month, as the ambassador said, the 6 Israeli holidaymakers brutally murdered by a suicide bomber in Bulgaria. And let me say that we in Britain will do everything we can to help hunt down those who are responsible for that attack. Britain will always be a staunch friend of Israel. We know that after centuries of persecution, the State of Israel must and does provide a secure home for the Jewish people. The attack in Munich and other attacks in both Israel and around the world remind us that even after the horrors of the Holocaust, the scourge of anti-Semitism is still present and needs to be confronted every day in every country, including our own right here in the United Kingdom. It reminds us of the need for right-minded people around the world to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Jewish people and proclaim, never, ever again. And we will stand with the Jewish people and with all victims of terror around the world, wherever they are and wherever they are from. Because we in Britain know only too well what it is like to suffer at the hands of terrorists. In July 2005, there was that great moment of euphoria at winning the right to host these Olympics. But it was brutally shattered within just 24 hours when terrorists targeted the London transport system and 52 innocent men and women in London were murdered. But our two countries, Britain and Israel, we share the same determination to fight terrorism and to ensure that these evil deeds will never win. 7 years on from 7/7, I'm proud that as we speak, this great city of London, probably the most diverse city anywhere in the world, is hosting athletes from 204 countries. And I'm delighted that a strong Israeli team is among them, and I'm honored that they join us here tonight. You are very, very welcome here in our country.
And we are back. It's the Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. I put that note because the news today was in Israel was about the story that came out from the Olympic of 72 in Munich. You know, when the athletes, the stories like this, in 1972, there was attack on the Israeli athlete in the Olympics. Of course, they were protected. I can't believe that. But in Germany, they weren't protected. And they came and they killed them all. But the truth of the matter is now revealed that the German government did not disclose all documents. And what happened is they were tortured or some sort. There are pictures. And the widow this morning was speaking about it. And she mentioned that it took them so many years to ask for those documents. And still to these days, they don't have it all. They don't know really the story. And whoever saw the movies about München, about the fact that the Israeli went after everyone who killed those athletes and the Mossad got rid of them, knows that a little about what that really happened. And the winner today was from Mr. Romano. It was one of the heavy-duty, heavy lifters between the athletes, which was a great personality. And they start talking about horrendous pictures. Now, if you look back at the story, you see that whatever we did then with the world did then with attack on terrorism is completely wrong. Because the fact that they put them in the buses, they put them on a plane, whatever. I don't think that Israel will let them even move an inch. They wouldn't get out of that room or that building alive. There was no way that today, in any country, those terrorists. And we have Rio 2016, and for some reason, we don't commemorate a moment of silence in the Olympic in the memory of those lost souls. For some reason, it's Israeli. Who cares? You know, let's talk Turkey. You guys overlooked it. There are athletes who lost their life, and nobody cares to commemorate it. But I would suggest this time that in Rio 2016, when you guys have a 10,500 sportsmen participate and women participating from with 306, you know, kind of division of the sports, a 42 division of the sports, but you will have a 306 competition between August 5, 2016 to August 21st, 2016, we are going to be in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which is an open party for every want to be, you know, ISIS. You guys should commemorate the memory. And not just because I'm Israeli and I think that, you know, listen, after 40-some years, you guys didn't give them the respect, what should I expect? But I'm saying, once you commemorate them, you remind all the audience and all the security guys and all the sportsmen there that you have to be alert, to be watchful, not to be overwhelmed with the practice of sports only. You are in the middle of a war on terror, and they will use any available method to do it. And the important thing that everybody will be vigilant. That's the difference between life and you know, being dead. So if you guys want people to remember that there was some atrocity taking place there, it's not like, oh, let's have security people in the gate. They cannot do it themselves. Security comes with the people. You have to have the people watchful. You know, every single person needs to be focused and alert. It's not normal. Yes, it's not normal. But you better be safe than sorry. And by starting the campaign with commemorating the death of athletes, exceptional people, human beings, trust me, there were beautiful people there. All right? If you remember to commemorate them, the people will remember to be safer, let's say. All right? So your alert function from the population, from the people on the ground will be higher. Use that as a real good reason to commemorate. So the loss of their life will not be in vain. Amen. All right, that was the fact about that. I am sure I prepared some more news about the Olympics, but if we can get to the next news segment, it will be okay too. Whatever I get, I'll play with it.
Olympic dream. The father of the modern Olympics, Baron Pierre de Coubertin, said the most important thing in the Olympic Games is not to win, but to take part. This credo defined David Berger.
David's goal was to be in the Olympics. He always said he was going to be in the Olympics.
He knew there were people there who were just going to achieve more than he could possibly achieve, but that didn't deter him. He was going to give it his best shot. He was just happy to be there and competing.
David's passion for weightlifting matched his thirst for learning. He attended Tulane University and eventually Columbia University Law School.
I used to always kid him that he wasn't the best weightlifter in the world, he was just the smartest.
When not in the classroom, David was competing in tournaments. He competed in the Maccabee Games in Israel, fell in love with the country, and eventually moved there in 1970. After becoming an Israeli citizen, he qualified for Israel's 72 Olympic team. David was about to live his dream.
I know he was so proud. He had to be.
David was one of the 12,000 faces in Munich that summer.
We saw him march in, and that was it. That was all we saw.
On September 2nd, 180-pound David Berger competed as a light heavyweight. After succeeding at earlier lifts, he was eliminated for not lifting 363 pounds. There was no medal, just a lifelong dream fulfilled. The Olympic Stadium stands as it did when the athletes of the world came for the greatest sports event of them all. Another monument in the athletes' village, the building at 31 Connollystrasse, also stands. Jews were taken for slaughter from here, too, at the Munich Olympics. Innocents died that day, September 5th, 1972.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report from ABC News and ABC Sports.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim McKay speaking to you live at this moment from ABC headquarters just outside the Olympic Village in Munich, West Germany.
We were having breakfast. I was going to the office, and my secretary called me, and she said, "Did you watch the television?" And I turned on the television, and at that time, we knew that a number of Israeli athletes had been taken hostage.
Man in the room, David Berger, 26 years old, a former United States citizen, we are told by the Israelis, moved there about 2 years ago.
You've been glued to a television set now most of the day trying to get some information on that. Have you gotten any help from any of our governments or any of the agencies?
No. All the specific information that I've had have all come over the TV media.
Nobody called us and we couldn't reach anybody.
The tense vigil continues.
So we sat in the other room with our friends from early morning and just watched Jim McKay's broadcast.
The battle goes on. The deadline, 5 o'clock. That's in an hour and 45 minutes. Jim McKay, as the Olympics continue in Munich, West Germany.
I thought of one family certainly watching in Shaker Heights, Ohio. They were the parents of 28-year-old David Berger. Now he was one of those helpless men, bound together, blindfolded, not knowing if or when they would be executed. And I would be the person who, in the end, would tell the Berger family whether their son was alive or dead. I had better be sure when I told them.
One of the men, by the way, who is a hostage, as far as we know, is still alive, is David Berger, who went to Columbia University, Chris. He was the only American-born member of the Israeli team that was being held captive.
You know, in the back of your mind, we've got to be careful what we say, because not that 20 million people were watching, but one of these kids' parents is watching.
To rescue Jews who had again, for how many times in the history of their people, heard the terrible knock on the door, the pounding on the door in the middle of the night.
You could see that he really was involved. You know, he wasn't just rattling off a news event. I mean, you got the impression that he was really disturbed, you know. 6 o'clock our time, Reuters put out an international thing that all the people were safe and that the terrorists had been captured.
We kept saying, but he hasn't called, he hasn't called. And then slowly began to realize it wasn't the time to celebrate.
The latest word we get from the airport is that, quote, all hell is broken loose out there, that there is still shooting going on, still no word, the word we really want from the hostages.
We had it on very good information, eyewitnesses, for almost 2 hours that they were dead. Rune determined we cannot go with this because it wasn't responsible to our viewers, and also part of our viewers were David Berger's family. And this put an incredible amount of pressure on McKay, who was sitting there and who knew for all intents and purposes that they were all dead, or at least we believed.
Even after long years in the business, it's still difficult to realize that the camera lens is actually the eyes of millions of people. I looked into those eyes, still thinking especially of that family in Shaker Heights. And I know that my own eyes are heavy with sorrow. And I knew what I must...
As a kid, my father used to say, our greatest hopes and our worst fears are seldom realized. Our worst fears have been realized tonight. They've now said that there were 11 hostages. Two were killed in their rooms yesterday morning. Nine were killed at the airport tonight. They're all gone.
They're all gone. Remember that?
And we turned off the television set and everybody went home. That's how it ended.
I've never met the Bergers, but for years I've been uneasy about my role that day, having to tell them about the fate of their son. No words could soften the blow, and as a parent, I couldn't even imagine what they had gone through.
As we would say in Yiddish, he's a mensch, which translates a person, you know, a real person. And that's what he is. That's our feeling. We feel the same way 30 years later.
The Munich Olympics shredded the emotions of the world. The gold, silver, and bronze of the medals gave way to the blue steel of rifle barrels.
And Jim got us through it, and his reputation was enhanced accordingly.
The irony is that he'll be most remembered for that tragic day in Munich.
It's been written that the past is but prelude.
All right. Are we back now? I think we are. It's devastating to think about it. But what I want to send here is the message. I want to know all the story. If the Germans are holding up to some more documents about that event, and the investigation maybe never been completed, because it wouldn't rise if it wasn't open, because it does open so many wounds. But the important thing about it, think about the future. This next year, if you have a New Year resolution coming up in December, we are in December. In 2016, we have the Olympics. What the world is going to do about, security? This is Rio. They have it's not a big country like America that, you can have a major forces coming and you can trust that they're going to take care of business. You guys have to have a special unit for that. So if, by all means, if those lives were ever sacrificed for the goods of the universe, if that's the sacrifice God always say, that when it's lost, it's for some reason, let's make them the reason to be safe this year. To make sure that there is no harm to any, because the athlete needs to have really incredible, incredible year, an incredible Olympic, God willing. All right, so let's have some more music if we can, and we'll be back after that. Time is running fast.
Quanti giorni vuoti, quanti giorni tristi in questa nostra vita. Quante delusioni, quante inutili passioni nella vita.
All right, that was really, sometimes you need to understand that after the music, after the wrong set of news, it cannot match. Too much of concern, too much of caring. I'm not saying it to be said or anything. It's just be alert, all right? I've been through a lot in and off, and they're all in the midst. I think that there is a good message out there that we all united and we're going to win this war. We need to keep, the Turks in check if they are playing both sides, and then everything is going to be okay. There are all sort of news, but the important thing that we all on the right side. Now there are a few things that we still have to talk about. What we're going to do next week? Next week, the Jewish people are going to celebrate Hanukkah. The holiday of light. It's the holiday where we commemorate the miracles on, in the temple, that we found a little oil can to light the menorah for 8 days. The idea that Israel had a temple once is something that nobody wants to hear about. And I say, everybody needs to have a center, a spiritual center, like a church has its center. You can have a major big center, like the mosque have a center, everyone. For some reason, the Jewish didn't get to the point where there is a permission for them to have a center like this. And many of Israelis don't even want to talk about it because it creates some kind of pressure. Of course, it's uncomfortable. It's not easy to explain to people that you want to, to create a center, especially we don't know how the center will be, even though that there is a special instruction on that it's a house for everybody. And that's the point of making Jerusalem universal. It's by making a center of worship for everybody, all the world, you know, all denomination under one roof to celebrate unity. That will be after we overcome this war, I guess. We'll come to celebrate together as a unit. Maybe that's the way it's going to work. I don't know. But it's going to be some kind of work between now and then to overcome. But we will. You know, there is a few facts that I can talk about. But I think about one thing that I want to emphasize. Let's go back to business and start working. Because if we don't unite ourselves in the global economy, we cannot, at the end of the day, we're going to spend all our money killing those bastards. But at the end of the day, they're going to run out of, you know, somebody will run out of money at the end. So we better start marching toward a good thing. And I know that the incitement in the internet is really massive. They are not giving up any chance of giving us the hard time, blaming whoever for whatever. But the idea is the blaming doesn't matter. The fact that you have the right to leave, like everybody else has the right to leave, but for some reason, they don't want to give us the right to leave. So know that there is a God. And it's not us, so it's not them, definitely. And we're going to overcome it. No other chance. Anyway, it's almost done. Today is the end, you know, of this week's broadcasting. But for me. But next week I'll talk to you on Monday. We're gonna skip Sunday. It's gonna be on Monday on the regular time. We're gonna keep on praying for a good time, and I hope you have so much fun that the only thing that we can listen to is some music. Okay, so be good. Don't go far, but keep warm and happy, and give love to everybody. And do your best, because, you know, time is precious. Enjoy it, all right? God bless you all. I love you. I hope that everything will be right, and we'll see you next week. We'll talk to you next week. God bless you. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.